no surprise that newsmakers try to manipulate the audience. They want you to believe that they are the one holding the line, and they'll use any trick they can to get you there. But don't let them fool you. Get unspun. I'm Amanda Sturgill. I've been a reporter, and today I teach future reporters to cut the spin and think critically about what newsmakers say. My podcast, Unspun, shows you how to know when you're being manipulated by the news. Learn to spot the tricks and how to make up your own mind about what's true. So if you're tired of being fooled by the news, subscribe to Unspun today. Unspun, because you deserve the truth.
'25 was a year of unprecedented attacks on public health in America, from the appointment of anti-vax conspiracy theorist Robert F. Kennedy Jr. to run the Department of Health and Human Services to devastating cuts to funding and medical research. Diseases like measles and whooping cough are making a comeback, and Americans are unprotected. Rebecca Parks from Protect Our Care explains what's happening and how it affects our health. Welcome to Care Talk Live, where we talk about how healthcare works or doesn't work in America and get you answers. I'm Laura Packard, cancer survivor and healthcare advocate, here to help you. Please text or call in your health insurance and healthcare questions at 202-838-6837, and our experts will answer them in future episodes. Be sure to subscribe to my channel or podcast wherever you get your podcasts to get future Care Talk shows. In today's episode, we're talking about the ongoing war on public health in America, the newly announced children's vaccine schedule, and how it will affect you. Welcome, Rebecca Parks, the research director at Protect Our Care.
Hi, Laura. I'm so happy to be here. As always, I wish I was here under happier circumstances, but always happy to talk about our war on public health and Robert Kennedy Jr.
Well, let's start with what is public health for people that have heard the term a lot but aren't really sure what it is.
Sure. Public health is kind of all of the aspects of our healthcare system that touch on general population health. So that's vaccination schedules, that's treatment for communicable diseases, as well as research into treatments and cures for various kinds of diseases. So it just is everything other than your direct relationship with your doctor. It's all of our relationship with the healthcare system in this country.
Right. So there's your personal health, and then public health is your community's health.
That's right.
So there are these ongoing attacks on our public health in the past year. Can you talk about what that looks like?
Sure. Well, it's been nearly a year of having Robert F. Kennedy Jr. as our Secretary of HHS, and it really has been a pretty unrelenting year-long attack on our public health, including just this afternoon when RFK made the announcement that we're going to be changing the childhood vaccination recommendation schedule, dropping down from 17 recommended vaccines for American children to 11. This has been a long in the works, but it's been, of course, chaotically announced. We seem to be modeling ourselves after Denmark's vaccination schedule, but it's really unclear whose advice they were taking, other than Donald Trump said we need to have fewer vaccines, and so that's what they've delivered is fewer vaccines. There's real risks here. We're dropping the recommendation that children be vaccinated against rotavirus, influenza, hepatitis A, and this already comes after they've changed the recommendation for hepatitis B vaccinations for children. These are serious conditions that do result in very serious illnesses and even death for children and adults in this country.
So when people say Denmark, they're a pretty healthy country, why shouldn't we copy Denmark? Why is it not a good idea?
Well, I think even the Danish public health authorities would say that the United States is not Denmark. Denmark is a country that first and foremost has universal healthcare in a way that we do not have in the United States. And if we were going to model ourselves after Denmark, I would humbly suggest that would not be a bad place to start. Denmark also has a population smaller than that of New York. So we have so many more people, so much more diversity. It's just really apples and oranges to try to impose something that may work for a small, wealthy universal healthcare country like Denmark, but may not work and may impose some real serious risks on the United States.
So the changes in the childhood vaccine schedule that were just announced today, we're still digesting this news and what that's going to mean. But this doesn't mean that that parents can't vaccinate their children. This just affects whether insurance covers it, or what does it mean?
It's what's recommended. But at least what they're reporting now is that the vaccines that no longer have a universal recommendation are still going to be covered by federal health insurance. So that's Medicaid and CHIP and the Vaccines for Children program. And so parents who do want to vaccinate their children against these conditions may not have to pay out of pocket. At least that's what they're saying today. But we're still sort of digesting exactly what all of this means. And again, this was done in a really unilateral and chaotic way without consulting the normal vaccine advisory committees that would provide feedback and guidelines for what this all means.
And let's talk about those vaccine advisory committees, because one of the first things that RFK Jr. did was fire all the experts, right?
That's right. And he replaced them all with people who were very sympathetic to his conspiracy theorist view of vaccines, people who were not really experts in virology or vaccines at all. He fired them all after making promises during his confirmation hearing that he would not do that, went ahead and did it anyway. And the end result of this has been this sort of ongoing turmoil and chaos, and nobody really knows, well, what's recommended and what's not anymore. And, we're already in a situation where vaccination rates have been declining almost across the board, especially for really communicable diseases like measles. And this is only going to create more confusion and more distrust of the vaccine recommendations.
Exactly. And the confusion and chaos has real effects. I spent quite a long time this fall trying to get a COVID booster. I live in Virginia, and the conflicting recommendations, the different recommendations by state, made it very difficult to get vaccinated if you wanted to get vaccinated. So that's going to be another outcome, I think, from all these changes, is people that want to keep their kids safe are going to have problems doing so.
Right. And going from you deliver a baby and they give you this sort of list of recommended vaccines and a schedule to this kind of choose your own adventure system is really only going to increase distrust and confusion about what's going on. And it was similarly very difficult to get vaccinated over here on the other side of the river in DC. So we can look forward to that in every pediatrician's office, I guess, from here on out.
And it may be something to consider taking your kids to your pediatrician's office if there are going to be children in the waiting room that have communicable diseases like measles and your child is not protected.
Yes, we have seen a massive outbreak of measles in this country all year long. We've had more than 2,000 cases. That's by far the most that we've had in this country for 30 years. We've had, unfortunately, 3 people in this country died of measles this year, the first measles deaths in decades in this country, including 2 children. I would sort of, recommend for most folks, talk to your pediatrician. What are their policies about, vaccinations, and whether they allow unvaccinated kids who are potentially ill with something that would be very communicable in their waiting room, or what exactly their policies are. And it's really unfortunate that we have to do this now on a pediatrician by pediatrician basis, but that's sort of where Robert Kennedy has left us.
And let's talk about some of the other cuts to public health and how that's affecting us, starting with the gutting of medical research, which we may not see effects right away, but we'll never know the cures that could have been developed, but those researchers got cut, their grants got ended and they got laid off.
There have been billions and billions of dollars in cuts to medical research. And that is affecting people right now. Roughly one in 30 NIH-funded clinical trials was affected by grant funding disruptions this year. That's 74,000 trial participants. That's people who are, in many cases, desperately ill and looking for, you know, some hope for treatment that may be effective, had their trials disrupted. So that's, you know, that's an immediate impact. That's not 5 years, 10 years from now. That's now. And so we're really anticipating that's only going to accelerate as these cuts continue to ripple across across HHS and all of our federal health agencies.
What would you recommend that people watching and listening do to protect themselves and their families? I mean, there's only, we do not have the power to fire Robert F. Kennedy Jr., but what would you recommend people do now?
We do not, although we will continue to advocate that he be fired, that he be held accountable for the damage that he has done to our public health system and the risk that he's putting all of us at, as you know, many of us warned at the time of his confirmation that he was a very dangerous pick for HHS. And so much of that has been borne out by what's happened in the last year. I would recommend that everyone make sure that they are up to date on all of their vaccinations. Everything's still available. Nothing has been taken off the market or anything like that. So you can get a flu vaccine. You can, most cases, can get a COVID vaccine fairly easily. You may have to contact your doctor now, but it is doable. I would also recommend that folks don't continue to advocate. Make sure you're calling, especially if you live in states that have, say, you know, Republican members of the Senate like Bill Cassidy, and let them know that you want them to hold RFK accountable and to make this stop.
Mm-hmm. And it can be uncomfortable to have some of these conversations with your friends and family. But if I had a young child, I would probably talk to parents before playgroups and that kind of thing, yeah, to make sure that my kids are not being exposed to sick, unvaccinated children.
I would suggest that as well. It can be very uncomfortable, but you know, I had a niece who was born a couple years ago, and my own brother asked me in nature, have you been vaccinated for pertussis, whooping cough being another disease that has really had a comeback? And we have actually seen a decent sized handful of kids, unfortunately, pass away from whooping cough already, or last year. Make sure you know if someone is going to be with your infant, especially if they are themselves too young to be vaccinated, try to know what their vaccination status is and take the steps that you can take to make sure you're protecting yourself and your family.
Right. And as we learned from COVID, most vaccinations do prevent you from getting the disease, but they don't work perfectly for everybody. And sometimes it just means you get a less severe version. So just having your own vaccinations doesn't completely protect you if you are in an unvaccinated world.
Yes. And unfortunately, especially for diseases like the measles, yes, you are, if you have been vaccinated for measles, you are protected against getting the measles. But the real important thing for measles is you need a certain level of herd immunity. And that protects babies who are too young to be vaccinated, people who, for various reasons, immune conditions and stuff, can't be vaccinated against measles. And the lower the vaccination rate drops, the more risk we're putting all of those people at. So I would, again, really encourage folks to make sure you are up to date on your vaccines and, you know, do your part to protect all of our community members.
Thank you, Rebecca, for protecting our care. How can people get updates on the latest in threats to public health?
We publish a weekly newsletter called Public Health Watch that runs through all of the latest activities, what HHS is doing on our vaccine schedules, what the status of various outbreaks is, and the other sort of chaos that's being imposed at FDA and HHS and CDC. I would encourage everyone to go to our website, protectourcare.org, sign up to receive that. It comes out on Wednesdays now. It was Mondays for a long time, but we've in the new year switching to Wednesdays. So watch your inbox, and we'll often include sort of suggestions for actions that people can take around these important issues.
Well, thank you very much for joining us, and thanks for protecting our care.
Thank you so much for having me, Laura.
And now our experts will answer your health insurance questions. Welcome to Louise Norris, Health Insurance and Healthcare Reform Analyst at healthinsurance.org, and Diane Archer, the founder of Just Care and Senior Advisor on Medicare to Social Security Works. So let's start with something we've been talking about on several shows for months and months now, which is the Affordable Care Act tax credits that have now gone away because it is January 2026 and it is a new year. So Louise, Congress just came back or is in the process of coming back. They didn't take action last year. What's going on and what does that mean?
Yeah, so in December, they did consider bills to extend the subsidy enhancements and they did not pass. So at the end of 2025, the subsidy enhancements that had been in effect for 5 years expired. That means that as of 2026, we are back to the subsidy structure that existed prior to 2021. So what that means for enrollees, marketplace enrollees, is and just to compare it to 2025. In 2025, your subsidy amount was based on your cost for health insurance being somewhere between 0% and 8.5% of your income, regardless of how much you earned. There was no upper limit on income to qualify. Since the subsidy enhancements expired, the way the subsidy structure works now in 2026 is you are going to pay somewhere between 2.1% and 9.96%. So it's shifted everybody a little bit up in terms of the percentage of their own income they have to pay for their coverage after their subsidy, which basically makes the subsidy smaller. And also there is now, we're back to having a cap on subsidy eligibility, a hard limit at 400% of the federal poverty level. So if you earn more than 400% of the poverty level, you, as of January 2026, you don't qualify for any federal marketplace subsidies. And just for reference, that's just a little under $63,000 for a single person and a little under $129,000 for a family of four if you're in the continental United States. If you're above that limit, there are no longer any federal subsidies. This is still in consideration in Congress, so it could still change, but the status quo as of where we are today is that those federal subsidy enhancements have gone away. There are 10 states that offer their own state-funded subsidies on top of the federal subsidies. Four of those states, Connecticut, New Mexico, Massachusetts, and New Jersey, do extend their state subsidies above 400% of the federal poverty level. So depending on where you live, it's possible you could still qualify for subsidies from your state, even if your income is above that 400% of the poverty level mark, but in most states you will not. And like I say, it is still under consideration in Congress. It's possible we could see some changes, but just so folks know, that's where things sit as of today with the marketplace subsidies.
Thank you for that, Louise, even though that is not good news. I do believe that the U.S. House may have a vote as soon as this week on extending those subsidies because the discharge petition was successful last month and the whole legislative process, it needed time to quote unquote ripen. And so it's my understanding there may be a vote as soon as later this week on that in the House. Yes.
In the House, it is expected there'll be a vote on that. But it's for a 3-year just extension of what we had in 2025. And the Senate already voted on that back in December and it failed. They needed 9 additional Republicans to join to pass it and they didn't get that. So it didn't pass. So the chances that they could get 9 more Republicans to join on is probably slim, but we shall see. It is expected to get a vote in the House, and then we'll just have to see where it goes from there as far as whether the Senate were to agree. It's also possible we could have another round of some sort of modified extension where they do like a partial extension or they extend the subsidy enhancements with changes. We just don't know where Congress will go with this. So people should definitely stay tuned.
Thanks, Louise. And next, Medicare open enrollment ended last fall, but Medicare Advantage open enrollment has begun. So Diane, tell us, what is Medicare Advantage open enrollment and what do people need to do?
Great question, important for people to know about. So the Medicare Advantage open enrollment period is a period in which people, older adults, people with disabilities enrolled in Medicare Advantage have an opportunity to either switch to another Medicare Advantage plan or to switch out of Medicare Advantage and into traditional Medicare. And that period runs from now until March 31. So you have 3 months. And what I would ask and people to do who are in Medicare Advantage, and about half the Medicare population is now in Medicare Advantage, is to consider the three big differences between Medicare Advantage and traditional Medicare during this time and make sure that you fully understand them. There's the cost piece, which I think most people are aware of, but then there's also the question of where you can get your care, who you can get your care from, and when you can get that care. And the answer to those three questions are different in Medicare Advantage from traditional Medicare. So let me just go through that very quickly. In traditional Medicare, you have access to doctors and hospitals, I think more than 90% of them, for your care that will be covered anywhere in the country. So there isn't a limited geographic area of coverage. You can get coverage anywhere. And also there is not restrictions as to which doctors you can see and have your care covered. And then the third difference is that in traditional Medicare, if you're treating physician and you agree that care is needed, medically necessary, you will get that care. In Medicare Advantage, in many plans, the insurers will often second guess whether that treatment is needed, and they will inappropriately delay and deny coverage. And that has been a problem, particularly for people in poor health needing cancer care urgently or rehabilitation care, skilled nursing care, inpatient hospital care. The costliest services tend to be the ones that people aren't able to get. So even if you're healthy, though, the reason we have health insurance is to protect yourself from unforeseeable healthcare needs. And in traditional Medicare, those needs will be met in almost all instances, whereas in Medicare Advantage, you may struggle to get those needs met. Now, let me now move to the second question, which is, well, aren't there some Medicare Advantage plans that are better than others? And why do I need to move to traditional Medicare? Can't I just move into a Medicare Advantage plan that actually will meet my needs? And the answer there is you might be able to if we knew which Medicare Advantage plans would meet your needs. The problem is that the information isn't available. It's like going into a restaurant and not knowing what the price of any food is, or buying a house without having the termite inspection. You just have no clue how to distinguish among Medicare Advantage plans. So you're literally gambling with your life as to whether you'll be able to get the care you need. Again, in traditional Medicare, it's not a gamble. You get to see the doctors you need to see. The other big difference, as I mentioned at the start, though, is in traditional Medicare, there are no limits on your out-of-pocket costs. There's a 20% payment that you will need to make unless you have supplemental coverage. And that can be hard to get. So if you do decide to switch to traditional Medicare, you will probably want to get Medicare supplemental coverage, sometimes called Medigap, unless you have Medicaid, which will pick up these costs, or a Medicare savings plan, which will often pick up these costs. So that will be an additional cost to you. So you'll have the freedom to see the doctors you want to see when you need to see them anywhere in the country, but you will pay more upfront. That said, if you get sick in Medicare Advantage, your out-of-pocket costs, while capped, could be very, very high, thousands and thousands of dollars. So In fact, if you do need healthcare services, traditional Medicare could also be less expensive at the end of the day. Okay, what do you need to do to sign up? You can either notify your Medicare Advantage plan that you're leaving and you'll be automatically enrolled in traditional Medicare, or you can actually just enroll in another Medicare Advantage plan and you will automatically be enrolled in that plan. In both cases, your enrollment will begin on the first day of the following month.
Great. So people, like you said, have until March 31st to make these changes.
Exactly.
And the clock is ticking for people who have insurance through the Affordable Care Act or who don't have insurance yet. So Louise, can you talk about what the dates are for open enrollment for the Affordable Care Act and what people need to do?
Yes. So Idaho has already ended their open enrollment period. If you know, their open enrollment period ended in mid-December. At this point, to sign up for health insurance in Idaho, you need a special enrollment period linked to a qualifying life event. But in most states, you have until January 15th to sign up for marketplace coverage or to make a change. If you already have coverage that automatically renewed for January and you're not happy with it, you'd rather pick a different plan. Like maybe you didn't notice that your premiums were going up and you want to still shop for coverage, you can make a change that'll take effect February 1st. There are several state-run marketplaces that will let people enroll even past January 15th. Massachusetts, you have until January 23rd. Virginia, you have until January 30th. And then in Connecticut, California, New Jersey, New York, Pennsylvania, Rhode Island, and DC, you have until January 31st. And Connecticut and Pennsylvania, those are just very recent extensions. They just announced them within the last couple of days. So those state-run marketplaces, you have until the end of January to sign up. Everywhere else, January 15th is the date you need to keep in mind. If you either haven't enrolled yet and you are just uninsured right now, or if you let your policy automatically renew for 2026 and you'd rather have something different, set your calendar reminder for January 15th to go to your state's marketplace and look at the options that are available and pick a plan to start in February. After open enrollment ends, everywhere in the whole country, regardless of whether you're enrolling through the marketplace or outside the marketplace, even this is sometimes a misconception, even if you go directly to the insurance company, you will not be able to sign up without a qualifying life event. So something like proving that you lost other coverage, having a baby, something like that, you won't just be able to sign up for coverage or make a change to your plan. So it's really important to keep those deadlines in mind.
And we've talked about this before, but if somebody has sticker shock and their plan auto renewed and it's more than they can afford, what are your suggestions?
So unfortunately, because the federal subsidy enhancements expired, if you are over 400% of the federal poverty level, those are the folks who are seeing the biggest sticker shock just in terms of the dollar amount that their policy is increasing. If they qualified for a subsidy in 2025 and they qualify for no subsidy at all in 2026, in some cases, people are seeing hundreds or even thousands of dollars in additional premiums that they owe. It is worth talking with an accountant to see if you can get it's a form of modified adjusted gross income that's used under the ACA, but it is specific to the ACA. Contributions to a health savings account will reduce that income that they use. So will contributions to a pre-tax retirement account. So you might find that by enrolling in a policy that's HSA eligible, which includes all bronze marketplace plans this year, and or by contributing to pre-tax retirement savings, you might find that you can bump yourself down to that level where you do qualify for a subsidy. And depending on where you live and how old you are, it could be a really significant difference. If you are below that 400% of the poverty level limit, and so you are still qualifying for a subsidy, but it's not covering as much of your premium as it was, you could still be seeing a very significant percentage increase in terms of how much you might have been paying $50 a month last year, and suddenly you're paying $100 a month this year. And that's where we really want folks to know that up until January 15th, in almost every state, you can go in and look and see if your policy automatically renewed. There might be something that better fits your budget, and you do have that these next, you know, 10 days and maybe into the end of the month, depending on where you live, to pick something different that will better fit your budget. It's better to have maybe a policy that has higher out-of-pocket limits as opposed to no coverage at all because you couldn't afford to pay the premiums and let your policy lapse. So you're down to the wire now in terms of time to act, but you do still have a little bit of time to pick a different plan if you need to make it fit your budget.
Thank you, Louise. And thank you everyone for joining us to learn more about what's happening to public health in America this year and how it's going to affect all of us. Please text or call in your health insurance and healthcare questions at 202-838-6837, and we'll answer them in future episodes. Join us in the future for more on healthcare in America. Be sure to subscribe to my channel or podcasts wherever you get your podcasts. My name is Laura Packard, and this is Care Talk.
I'm Frances Callier.
And I'm Angela V. Shelton.
And we're Frangela.
You know what you need in your life? The Final Word podcast.
Yes, you do.
That's right. It is the final word on all things political and pop cultural.
Where we make real news real funny.
Where we inspire you so you can hashtag resist.
Subscribe and get a new episode of the Final Word podcast each week. It's the news we think you need to hear.
That's right. We think you need to hear it. Okay.
Yeah, it's what we say so.
That's right. And because all we do is give, every Thursday you can listen to our hysterical podcast, Idiot of the Week.
We round up the stupid because you know what? Somebody has to.
Okay. All we do is give.